Mitch Easter of Let's Active, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Well, as you all know, the Catskill Mountains are just about over that way and have for generations been considered an enchanted place, as they still are today.
Tuesday, June 18th is Rip Van Winkle Day on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. This week marks the 200th anniversary of Washington Irving's Rip Van Winkle, and on June 18th, throughout the day, you'll hear performances, discussions, historical notes, and more about the myth and the legend of Washington Irving's Rip Van Winkle. You'll hear Catskill resident Brian DeWan tell the original tale with an accordion, and hear other programmers interview experts about the myth and the man and Washington Irving and Rip Van Winkle. Don't fall asleep on the Rip Van Winkle special, Tuesday, June 18th, on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
In colonial times, and in that village, lived Rip Van Winkle.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sheena Salvino of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing!
90.7 FM, listener-supported radio.
Good afternoon. This is the WGXC radio station, located in Accra, Catskill, Hudson. This is listener-supported radio for the open ears. We're on the radio dial at 90.7 FM, and we're global and streaming on WGXC.org. This is the monthly podcast that I host. I'm Chad Weckler, and the program is called The Art of the Hudson Valley. And for this June podcast, we have a group of wonderful artists here to talk about an exhibition that is coming up. I am going to introduce Cheryl Lacona, who's the headliner of the exhibition at the Davis Orton Gallery, and truth be told, she's my wife. So we've already asked each other can she call me by sweet names, and I said, whatever you want, that's fine. So, Cheryl, welcome. This is your first time here in the studio.
I know, Chad. You finally got me on the air.
Yay.
Yay.
So, what is going on with the gallery?
Well, the Davis Orton Gallery came to me last summer and offered me the opportunity to have a solo show in the front room of their gallery featuring my digital collages, and use the back room of the gallery to invite friends of mine who also are very talented and do mixed media. So that is what the show is about. It's called Cheryl Lacona and Friends. As one of the artists in the show calls it, the Cheryl Show. it officially opens June 15th. And the artist reception is the following Saturday, June 22nd. We didn't want to take any of the glimmer away from the Pride event that will be taking place on the 15th. So we're going to have our official artist reception on the following Saturday.
And who do we have in the studio today?
We have three of those very talented artists. One of them is Gretchen Kelly. Another is Dia Archbold. And the third, Marie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay, Maria Cologier-Zincio.
She has a beautiful name that
Thank
we just
you.
Learned how to pronounce properly today, but we didn't want to blow it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And so I chose them, A, because they're friends of mine, and many of them, they're several other artists, seven total that are in the show.
Who are they, by the way?
They are Kay Velas Turan, who does wonderful quilted pieces. They're really quilted paintings. They're really amazing. They're wall art. Another is Lisa Bresnik, who's a sculptor, and we'll have some of her two-dimensional, three-dimensional foam core pieces that are really beautiful. They're white on white and very stunning. Then we have Melanie Burrows, who takes amazing jewelry. She's very talented, and she will be our only jeweler. Patty Gibbons is a collage artist and a painter. She does really just about everything. She's its powerhouse. Her ability to cross over between mediums is stunning. And who have I left out?
I think you got them all. There should be a total of seven artists, not including yourself.
Right.
Eight is great, as you might say.
There you go. And I like them particularly because they take the medium they work in and really sort of push the envelope with it. They you know, like Kathy making quilts into these amazing paintings was just mind-blowing. And Gretchen makes what she does, which is so beautiful, looks so easy and fluid. And we're also going to have videos that Gretchen records while she's doing her sketching on the weekends when she does from live models. She videotapes her process, and it's just stunning.
Well, why don't we have Gretchen talk about what she's going to be putting into the exhibition?
I'm going to be putting my watercolor paintings of figurative nudes and flowers, chosen by Cheryl, with a few edits by me. and there's going to be two iPads that are going to show the video, two videos that are fast motion, me painting in the process of creating a nude. Actually, the one that I'm submitting is for 10 one-minute poses that I do as an exercise in the beginning of life drawing class. And I believe that the 1 minute turns into 1 second. It's very fast, but it's fun. It looks about 1 minute. I mean, 1 second for 1 minute. It's really mesmerizing to watch, I have to say. And then there's another video, fast motion of me painting some flowers. Flowers, nudes, and landscapes are my main subject that I paint in watercolor all the time, around year round. But there won't be any landscapes in this show.
No, it was hard to choose, Gretchen. Really, it was hard to pick. But
Gretchen, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't you do a costume for a recent performance?
I did. I actually did two costumes for In Bulk, the opera, which was produced by Patrick Doyle and performed at the Basilica. It was in February, on the holiday of the transition of the quarter of the something. I can't even remember it anymore. But it's a Celtic occurrence on the calendar. And this opera was based on Demeter and her daughter and the change of the seasons when spring is coming forth. And I created a costume for Demeter, the goddess who, she's the goddess of the harvest. And there's a whole Greek mythology to the event. And anyway, Patrick asked me if I would be interested in doing costumes for Demeter and her daughter, Ophelia. No, it's not Ophelia. I forgot her name already. But I'm not so good at Greek mythology. But I created a costume that was, I consider, a piece of artwork. And it was interesting because I had never worked with Patrick before, and we were both very in sync with the process. He's got a collection of all kinds of supplies for all of his productions. So he gave me linen. He said, why don't you try using bleach and paint wheat on this fabric? And I did. I had to fit the model, the opera singer actually, and then the linen was brown, and I painted very graphically and free wheat reeds onto a gown, a long floor-length gown. And it was so interesting how the process unfolded and what happened with the bleach on brown linen. It was so beautiful. And then I did another costume in all greens for, oh God, I wish I could remember, the daughter's name who rises from the underworld. I'm sure many other people know it, but that was another costume for this production. And it was just amazing. I hadn't seen the whole production altogether. There was never a complete rehearsal. It was all in segments for all the different components to it. And in the end, at the Basilica, it was just amazing.
And so, you know, one of the things I like about, you know, just the four of you here, all four of you like putting pieces together. And I want to introduce Dia, who is also kind of in many disciplines that you do. And talk specifically, Dia, about what you'll have in the Davis Orton show.
Well, the pieces that I'm going to exhibit here are my glass pieces that focus on the nature, wildlife, a lot of birds, nests, and eggs, things like that. So I do put things together in a collage type of way because of the way I paint. That is my focus, is painting on glass. It's a kiln-fired glass technique that does go back many, many years in style, but I use it in a more painterly fashion than traditional. So lots of times I'm always filling the kiln with all these studies of wildlife, and I'll often get more painted pieces than I have finished pieces, so that I pull from these to then put together a collage, like a window piece that's all leaded together, and that's my finished piece.
Actually, Dia, if you have the chance, you should stop by. She's going to be on the studio tour. When is that going to happen,
Dia? That's going to be Labor Day weekend on September, August 31st and September 1st. It's a two-day event where anybody can pick up a map and go to the artist's studios and see how the process is done in each studio.
Is there a website for that?
There is. It's under ASV Art Studio Views. I think you would just Google that, and it should come up. It's been going on for, I think this might be the 12th year that they've been doing it. It's a lot in Dutchess, and now in the last several years it's coming up to Northern Columbia. So I've been on that for the last several years.
Because I had the chance to stop by Dia's studio when I was looking at her art for the show, and just being there was so inspiring and so interesting to see her process and how little accidents that she has when she's taking painted pieces and putting them together make a whole new concept that she's working on. And she also told me about her background. She's studied replacing pieces, broken pieces, damaged pieces,
restoration
in
work,
stained glass. And
that's what started me off, is working in these different studios, glass studios that some did restoration, a lot of them did commissioned work, and so you learn different aspects of the craft that I've collected over the years, and now I'm finally able to just do it as my own form of art.
And she has taken that. You can see it in her work. She's taken that and twisted it, like I said, everybody in the show has, just to make it her own.
Yeah, cause that's the ultimate goal that I finally reached, where I can not do the stained glass thing, quote unquote, but now it's become my art, and it's kind of recognizable in its unique style.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
So you won't have any of your watercolor works in this?
No, not in this exhibit. This we have the final result, which is all the painting on glass, and that led it into different panels.
Wow.
The watercolors aren't in the exhibit this time.
And Maria. Hi there, Maria.
Hi there.
What are you going to be having in the show?
Well, I'm an encaustic artist,
and caustic means, it's a Greek term for meaning burning in. It's working with beeswax. So my pieces will be all beeswax. And I'll have some pieces that will be floral, urban, landscape that I've created. But yet, even though I'm talking about landscape and floral, the way I work, it's kind of dreamy. So a lot of the pieces really are sort of cloudscape too, because they just, working with beeswax is a very unique medium. I should mention I'm a beekeeper, so I get a lot of my medium from my bees. I work with the beeswax and with pigment oils, which also has beeswax in it too. And the heat gun becomes my brush. And sometimes I incorporate my own digital work, which I print on rice paper. Sometimes I paint. Sometimes it's both, both the digital photograph and a little bit of extension of my own painting, because I've always been an artist. So I've got all the pieces will be done with beeswax. Yeah, and it's a very old kind of art. It goes back to 500 BC, and it's difficult to work with a little bit too, because the wax dries so quickly. But I've been able to work with that pretty good now.
Do most encaustic artists use beeswax, Maria?
Yes,
they do.
That is the base of your medium. And that's what encaustic is. It's beeswax. It means to burn in. It's working totally with beeswax.
Are you also working on a hot plate?
Yes, yes, I do have a hot plate. Mm-hmm. I have actually three of them. I have my cool colors, my warm colors, and then I have my medium, clear medium, which is my beeswax from my hives. So I'm working with two hot plates, and another one is just a hot frying pan, you know, that I've just... burn. Oh, you have to work with Damar resin also. I have to mix Damar resin because that's what gives it the hardness. If I just use beeswax, then it's soft and the sun could just melt it. But the Damar resin is what sets it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The way I first came to know of your artwork was the project you did concerning your mom.
Yes.
It was very beautiful and profound. Okay. And you should tell us about that.
Yeah. That is a... encaustic documentary. It's called The Lost Holocaust. It's perfect to talk about it today with D-Day and everything that's going on with World War II. It's a 20-piece encaustic documentary, 20 pieces that reflect her journey from her deportation from Eastern Poland to her imprisonment in Siberia in Stalin labor camps, to her freedom and passage through Tehran, Istanbul, Turkey, Africa, and then finally to her freedom, where she ended up with 1,500 other immigrants in Mexico. So there's this, it's the art of storytelling, and I've been cited in Northlight Books for that. It's talking about her journey and also representing Eastern Poland, which no one really talks about in history books, because that was another genocide where over 2 million Polish on the eastern side was taken into Siberia and thrown into labor camps there. But that whole piece is totally encaustic and photographs that I was able to get from her and also from my family who still lives in Poland. And what I did was, those are pieces that are actually probably the biggest pieces that I have, because most of my pieces are small, 16 by 20, and it incorporates found objects. It incorporates photographs. It incorporates found materials, fiber. So it's a little different than what I'm doing right now, but it's very potent as far as emotional. And it's been shown throughout New York State. So I'm really pleased with that. But thank you for remembering that.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty unforgettable. And it has a definite... collage feel to it.
It is definitely
more so
collage.
Than the pieces that you are doing now are more like paintings.
Yes.
In their essence.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is actually, you're right. Most of it's all collage because it's the photographs that we're able to capture.
Is
from
it
my
traveling
family.
Around?
I stopped for about 2 years now. I had it going for about Oh, it was a grant that I received from the New York State Foundation of the Arts. It was an individualized tier grant, and I believe it was shown in 2013, 14, and it went on for about 3 years. And then the last couple of years, I just kind of put it away for a while. Mm.
Maria, is there an oral history that goes with that exhibition?
Yes, I do. When you talk about, I do presentations with it, and I also have, I also put out a pamphlet with it that people can actually buy with all the pictures, with all the story behind it. So I do give a lot of times my presentations that I've done, both in Saratoga and all over. I usually give an hour presentation, and then people can, you know, look at the pieces and purchase the pamphlet. But yeah, there is an oral presentation to that.
Sounds like it would make a beautiful book. You should consider,
you know,
that.
A lot of people have asked me to do that. I just haven't gotten there yet because I feel I'm not a good writer.
But you could get someone to help you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a project.
Cheryl's raising her hand.
I can help you. I love to write, yeah.
Right. Yeah, you know, so many people have asked me to do that. Actually, there was somebody from Albany that wanted to do that, but we came into a couple of barriers, and I kind of put it away for 2 years for personal reasons. Yeah. And I'm thinking of bringing it back, but it's something. Oh, I've been asked to come out to Buffalo. There's a huge Polish community out in Buffalo that have asked me to bring the presentation out there. And I'm looking at it maybe next year to do that. But
I'm going to remind our listeners, keep your writing materials available, pencil and pen and paper, because we'll be mentioning everyone's website and how to look at their work along with the Davis Orton Gallery website. Cheryl?
Sorry, I keep interrupting you, Chad. It's something I do at home all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to say that I think a lot of our artists, if not all of them, have this storytelling capacity to their work. Whether it's your love of not just your historical piece about your mom, but also the way you can really feel in your pieces that you're talking about or showing something of your life here.
Right.
The birds, the bees, it's
right.
All in there in a very subtle way. And
yeah.
And Diaz is there in her love of nature, and all the pieces reflect that.
Mm-hmm.
And Gretchen, her constant painting of where she lives, her plein air paintings are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're all telling stories in a way.
Well, Cheryl, we haven't gotten to you yet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a storyteller. I was trained as an illustrator. And so when I moved up here to Columbia County, I wanted to try something completely different. So I started, I have collected vintage images like people collect stamps. I love them. And once the internet came into being, I was like a kid in a candy store. And I just started collecting all these amazing images of things that I'm drawn to. And I started taking the images and combining them. First as a way to teach myself Photoshop, but that became something just as a pathway into creating these digital collages. And I usually start with an object or a photo or something singular, and it brings me to some other image that could accompany it perfectly. And I layer them and adjust them and combine them. And they do end up being very storytelling. I often don't have a story in mind when I begin. But they evolve into this sort of little fantasy. And that's how I got into doing digital collages.
And you're going to have some three-dimensional pieces also.
I did want to do a piece of a collage, but more of a physical collage, not done on the computer. Parts of it maybe, but not all of it. And I wanted to involve a dress, a three-dimensional little dress. So I created one out of a doll pattern. I used a substance that can stiffen it, and it's actually called Stiffy, and make it hard so it's not soft and flexible, and then I mounted that on a board and surrounded it with an interesting story. That one had to do with my childhood report cards. I actually printed them on fabric, and integrated that all together. And then I just created a new one for the show called My Country Life, which is all about living in the country in a big old house. I have little $100 bills pasted on the roof of the house.
Not real ones, but
no, I wish they would have been, you know, they would have been helpful. But so yeah, I'm evolving a little bit into another kind of collage, and enjoying it. It's been like a breath of fresh air for me. Maybe because I was professionally working as an illustrator for so many years, sitting down to draw felt like work, and I really wanted to change into something different. And I'm so thrilled. This is my first solo show ever, and it's very exciting.
Gretchen, you're going to be having your nudes, which you do extremely quickly, and they're quite beautiful because they're using
gestural.
Yeah, the lines are very moving and colorful, and
gestural is a perfect word.
Yeah, that's exactly what they are, and that's what I love about working with watercolor and the figure. I attend at least one life drawing class a week. Now it's two because a friend of mine started another one that I've been going to. And I think from a young age, I've always just loved the female body. I used to look at my dad's Playboy magazine.
That's funny.
I really do think that's where it started. And then,
it's where it always starts.
Yeah. For anything. And then when I got to be a certain age, I wasn't allowed to look at them anymore, and I didn't understand that. But anyway, I started going to life drawing classes at a pretty young age. I think I was in high school. And after school, I would go to a college that had this life drawing class where I lived in Ossining. And then even before I went to 1 year of college, I took an anatomy class at School of Visual Arts. I don't know why, but I did. And it taught me so much. And I know I know about the inside of the body. Not that I could tell you the anatomical names or how the different systems in our bodies work, but I got a lot out of that as far as movement of the skeleton and the muscles. And so it's innate in me to I apply that knowledge from so long ago to when I paint the figure. And it's a life drawing class where most people are using charcoal or pencil traditionally, but I paint with watercolor and graphite and pastel. And in case nobody knows, a life drawing class is usually 3 hours long, and it starts out with 10 1-minute poses, which are my favorite thing to do, and I actually sell them on Etsy. It's like a genre that I do that people like a lot. So it's nice that that has turned into something sort of like a brand. And I like to play with color a lot. When Maria was talking about how she has one palette with warm colors and another with the cool colors, I kind of work that way. And I would consider myself a fauvist to a large extent. I paint green people all the time, but you might not even notice it because I put strong hits of neon pink mixed with it or red. And I'm focusing, when I'm looking at the human body, I'm focusing on what's hot and what's cool. And it doesn't matter to me if I'm using, you know, cadmium red for the edge of an arm. Usually arms are warm, and the reddest color on a nude's body. And then for her legs, when they're in shadow down below, because of the way she's sitting, I might use blue, both on the same body. And I like to bring that all together. And working fast, your brain is not really in charge. You're just doing. I'm just doing.
Yeah, it's not interfering.
Yeah, exactly.
I can tell that by your work. It just seems to flow right out of your fingertips. It's very beautiful.
I like to work fast. I don't think I really like working on paintings that take more than a day.
And I would imagine you don't go back and rework.
Hardly ever. I might add something.
Hmm.
And I photograph everything, and I put it on my Instagram account or my Facebook. And then I have different shops that I sell on, whether it's my Etsy shop or my my personal website shop, or I have a new shop, Cherish.
Hmm.
And
spell that, because it doesn't. It's spelled differently.
It's
than...
spelled like the chair, C H A I R I S H. It's an upscale home deck website. Interior designers go there to buy furniture and accessories and artwork.
Are any of you doing similar selling of your artwork on different sites, or is it, you know, studio tours and galleries? Maria?
No, I've not hit Etsy yet. I've been told about it, and I just haven't gotten there yet. Most of my work is at galleries. Yeah.
And you do really well on your website, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And my website, yeah, I do. So, yeah, the website and the galleries are my main, you know, marketing pieces.
Well, now's a good time, Maria, to mention that website.
Sure. It's www.mariakz.com.
That's easy.
Easy.
Yeah.
I try to make it easy. I was told to do that. You don't want people trying to find out what your other name is. If it's Maria KZ, how easy could that be?
Yeah. Perfect. And Dia, what about you?
Most of my stuff I exhibit in either galleries or the home tours. I do have a website, and it's mostly just to see what I've got. Usually purchasing is, you know, in person or through the galleries or something. I'm not interested in doing the Etsy. Glass is a little bit of a serious investment in having a place for it. And shipping, I'm not interested in getting the shipping of glass.
Yeah.
Big deal.
She does do commissions, though. You were working on a commission when I was there. Yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful commissions.
And it's a lot of word of mouth and a small, low-key kind of... getting to know people or getting my name out there. Mm-hmm. I work opposite of Gretchen, very slow. So it's the pieces take a lot of time. I mean, I may get an idea and it starts and it could go through so many stages from watercolors to painting, to then finally sometimes getting into glass, but not always. So it just takes a while for it all to happen.
Do you use found glass and purchase glass, or do you make glass?
I don't make the glass, but a lot of it is found. I work on a lot of plate glass. Plus, I have a pretty big stock from collecting, finding, and my days of purchasing of standard stained glass. But since I focus mostly on the painting aspect, I do like the clear glasses where I do add my own contrast and colors. Between the light and stuff.
And I would imagine your work is best backlit.
That's why I like to have its four windows. It is considered window panels. Occasionally, I've been working recently with trying to get a more reflective glass so that it works against walls, and that's something that I'm working on right now. And I have a few pieces in this upcoming show from my more recent work that's going to be on the wall, and it's hangs so that it's about a couple of inches off the wall, and that allows for light to get behind it and give it a small bit of illuminosity. But I also can do a more of a reflective tile kind of work, but this is my newer stuff, and it's still an experimental stage. And windows right now seem to do the best for the backlit.
Besides the restoration work that you've done, can your work be functional, meaning that you will actually do a real window for someone's home?
Oh, yeah. That's what a lot of the commission work is. I will make a custom size fit piece that will go into a window.
Wow.
That's what's on my docket right now, is an inside window between two rooms that will be lit by the space behind it. I like to use natural light as much as possible.
And several of Dia's pieces will be in the front windows of the Davis Orton Gallery, because we needed to show them lit. She captures light. That's what she does with her glass.
Right, so they reflect differently at different times of the day and on different kinds of days, too. So at night, they will reflect. You'll get the light from whatever light's going on outside. And sometimes you'll be outside and you'll get the full effect of the window versus being inside and getting the full effect of the window during the day versus the night, because they're constantly changing as light changes.
And Cheryl, you were obviously working very closely with Karen Davis to work on, because the gallery is two rooms together, open, very intimate.
Very intimate.
And there'll also be, as I recall, two portfolios of artists presented there.
Yes, she always does that with her shows. She has two portfolios with their work on another sort of screen above it. And so she includes that, she has handled on her own. Thank goodness. So yeah, the rooms are intimate. It's in an old brownstone, basically.
Yes.
And so the front room, and then there's a big arch, and then there's the back room that might have been the dining room. I'm not sure. There's a mantle in the front room, which is always fun to hang things above. I specifically have two pieces that I want to go there. So, yeah, it's very intimate, and I hope to just jam it full of wonderful art. I like that salon look,
yes,
as you know, from our study at home. And I think people like it, too. I think it's inviting, and you know, I just had so much room and so much art I wanted to show, so...
The Davis Orton Gallery, for our listeners, is at 114 Warren Street. That's Lower Warren.
Below Third.
Below Third. Hudson, I'm sure most of our listeners know, is full of galleries of wonderful artists. And it's, I think, Cheryl, a wonderful opportunity for you to be able to curate and bring a lot of your friends.
I was really, really honored to be able to do that and trusted to do that. I hope I don't let you down.
I'm sure you won't.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Right now we've designated primarily one room like the gallery where Cheryl's work is just everywhere, getting ready to be strung and hung. And
when Karen offered me this, we got together for coffee at Verdigris, and she asked me if I would like to do a show. And I got home and I emailed her. And I said, now, let me get this straight. Did you really offer me a solo show in the front room and I can have, you know, the back room to curate? And she said, yes, yes, that's what I meant. So I'm very flattered and excited. And
and Cheryl, you're always sharing on Facebook your images, and you also have a fashion distraction that gets a lot of attention.
It does get a lot. I started doing it when we had the last election, and I found found Facebook to be so filled with political anger, and I just wanted to create a distraction. And people love it. In fact, Karen told me I should do a book of these photos. She thinks I need to get more attention to it. But I thought I promised to do it until the administration was gone. And and it's gone on a lot longer than I expected. So it's turned into a thing of its own, which is fun.
It's refreshing to see.
Thank you. Because my background in illustration was in fashion. So, you know, I'm naturally attracted to it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you like it.
Oh, I do. That and the grace of gratitude.
Oh, thank you.
You turned me on that one, too.
Thank you so much.
Is everybody here a New Yorker, native New Yorker?
Native New Yorker. What makes you a native New Yorker? What's the
term?
Where
were you
on
born,
that?
Maria?
I was born in Mexico.
Right.
Oh yeah. I was born in Colonia Santa Rosa, which was a refugee camp for Poles. That's where Mexico opened their doors to
good for them.
To Poles. Oh, they were. My mother said that they were absolutely so embracing of what the Polish people were going through, and they opened up a whole hacienda for the immigrants coming through from Poland, from the war, the devastation. I was born there, and she lived there for about 5 years, and then finally it was safe to go home, but she decided not to go home. We came to the United States. But I am a Mexican citizen. And then we moved to Jersey.
That's a jump.
Well, there's a large Polish neighborhood. Actually, English is my second language. Polish was my first primary language. So, and then they bought a farm here in upstate New York, 110-acre farm and been here since 1959. Hmm. Yeah.
In Columbia County?
Columbia County, mm-hmm. So I'm kind of a half native, you know, three quarters of a native, but I consider Columbia County my home, definitely. But born and raised, no, but raised, yes.
How about you, Gretchen? Where are you from?
I'm from New York. I'm a New York girl, not the city, but I was born in White Plains, New York, and then a lot of my youth was growing up in Ossining, New York, on mm-hmm. the Hudson River. And it's a surprise that I'm back on the Hudson River. I never had a plan to do that. And but I'm happily here. I do prefer oceans, but the Hudson River is a good substitute.
That's right. It's the second best.
And I actually, with my artwork, I do like to focus on the locale, the Hudson River Valley. I am focusing on it more and more as time goes by. And I really embrace it. Like it becomes something that I love more and more.
Mm-hmm. And Dia, you're a native. You're a native.
I'm a native.
Yeah.
I was born here. I have family here. I'm related to half of the people in Germantown. Palatine.
Oh, right. You're definitely a native. Yeah. You're a Palatine descendant, aren't you?
I took a 20-year break and moved down and lived in New Jersey for a while and raised my kids there. But came back in 2004 and have been here, pretty much moved back to the homestead and set up my glass studio there.
Yeah, I'm a Valley girl too.
Valley girl, yes,
I
am. Of
I
the
was
eastern
born in Poughkeepsie,
persuasion, right?
I moved to New York City and I never thought I'd come back up the river either, but here I am.
I know, it's so interesting.
It is.
Yeah. I've always loved the Hudson River. I'm a river girl.
I think the Hudson Valley is one of the prettiest parts
it
of
is
the country.
The best.
It's just beautiful.
I don't think I'd ever leave it. Once we got here, that was it. It just so, and to know that all these Hudson River Valley painters were here to be inspired by that whole genre of amazing painters. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place to live. It really is.
Has good light. Has beautiful light, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. And the shape of the Catskill Mountains is just amazing. Mm-hmm.
The sunsets here are just gorgeous.
We have great skies.
Great skies.
We have good skies.
Great skies.
So, Cheryl, you, as you mentioned, you born in Poughkeepsie.
Yep.
You went to school, college in Albany.
Albany. I couldn't wait to get out of Poughkeepsie. But, you know, that's kind of the restless young attitude most people have.
Is that where the art started for you?
In Poughkeepsie?
No, in Albany.
Yeah, I was an art major. I just decided that's what I wanted to be. It's, my mother would shake her head in later years and say, I never had any idea that you wanted to be an artist. But so I was an art major, and I graduated from there with a portfolio full of nudes and had no way to make a living. And so my lovely parents paid for me to go to the Fashion Institute.
Oh, I was going to ask you how your fashion illustration career went.
I had I was a fashion illustrator in New York City in the 80s, late 70s, 80s, early 90s. It was the best time to be in fashion in New York. It was a smaller business.
I was in the fashion industry too.
Well,
designing.
I know that.
Yeah.
You were designing fabrics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then you know, it was a small business. It was a cutthroat business. I worked for lots of great people. I did illustrations for Bloomingdale's and Henry Bendel. I remember meeting Gertrude, what was her last name? Stutz. In person.
Geraldine Stutz.
Geraldine Stutz, thank you. In person when she hired me. And then I worked for cosmetic companies. I worked for some magazines. I illustrated 3 books for a woman who was a clothing coordinator. It was a good time to be a fashion illustrator. But fashion illustration sort of died.
Yeah, photography took over, I think.
Photography took over, and I think it had to do with the economy. Because when you hire an illustrator, you get one illustration. Mm-hmm. When you hire a photographer, you get rolls of film to choose from. So I think there was that sort of change in art direction that really killed it. But I continued to illustrate for many years after that. Not so much published stuff. I would do a lot of in-house, where I worked for Fortune Offs for a while doing Christmas trees. And It was a good run. I loved it.
And now all all of you are making a good run at fine art, which is not an easy,
not easy at all.
Not easy. Yeah, Chad and I moved up here thinking we would redefine ourselves because Chad was a commercial photographer. We would redesign ourselves as fine artists. Not so easy.
But it was a good time, I think, for all of us, because here in Hudson or Columbia County, we had the Columbia County Council on the Arts, where we often met.
Yes, it's where many of us met.
Yeah.
And was a great opportunity for local artists to show their work.
I mourn the loss of that organization.
Oh, tell me.
I think that the fact that Hudson has no art organization is just criminal.
Right.
Maybe that's the wrong word. Tragic.
There's so many artists here in this in Columbia County, you know, and Columbia County Council of Art was a great representation.
It was a great
place. So many different artists.
To exhibit.
It's a great loss to us. It really is.
Yeah, it was at least a place for artists as a community to get together. And now it's a little bit more fragmented. And Gretchen, you probably meet up with a lot of local artists.
I do.
And where do you meet up with them? What's your
avenue? We just hang
now?
Out, you know. We'll it's life drawing, or you know, for dinner, or out to dinner. You know, dinner at my house, their house, out to dinner. We trade a lot of information. I also like to be associated with shops and other organizations for me that have taken the place of the Arts Council. Like, for instance, Hudson River Exchange is very art and craft oriented, and they support artists really nicely. In fact, I make sure that I'm always involved with them in one way or another, and they usually have a pop-up shop that goes on for a couple of months at their location, or they sometimes team up with Drop Forge and Tool, which is another great arts organization, multidisciplinary workshops, and they house artists. They have residencies. And so I've participated in a lot of like small pop-up shows between those two organizations and pop-up shops. There's one coming up that I'm going to be in mid-June at the Hudson River Exchange. That's my next thing to get prepared for.
Is that a waterfront event?
No, they have stopped doing the tent down at the waterfront. I guess the Basilica kind of has taken over that kind of event. And they're not working that big anymore. That was quite a production. But they did such an amazing job of curating and hosting artists and craftspeople selling at the Hudson River Exchange. But now she has a small storefront that changes with different curations.
Where is that located?
It's on the 500 block on Warren Street, across the street from the fire station.
Okay.
They have a sign outside.
Yes. Actually, that sign is easy to miss.
Because it's white?
I think so.
Now, it's so easy to walk around Hudson. There's so much visual. Things could get lost and things do stick out. But
I just want to say one more thing. There's a new studio tour concept popping up in Hudson. And there's a meeting for artists to come to at the Red Dot on next Tuesday night for open studios if you want to participate in that.
Oh, that's good. Good to hear.
Yeah, that would be wonderful, because there isn't really one, is there? I know Germantown has one.
Germantown, and that's on the northern end of the Duchess.
Right. Rhinebeck, I think, has one.
That's the same one.
Oh, same one, okay.
Yeah, there's one on the other side of the river, Catskill. They have one, too. But I'm not sure when it is.
But your experience, and you shared your experience about that, it was wonderful, because as Dee said, people walk in, and here you are in your studio, there's no gallery fee that you have to pay?
No, you stage your own gallery. And what's really good about that for my medium is I get to show what glass painting and the kiln-fired glass painting is all about, which is kind of unique. There's not a lot of people out there doing it. So that gets a lot of attention and understanding is what it takes to get these images on the glass.
Dia, what's your website?
Ah, my website is glassbydia.com.
That's easy.
GlassByDea.com.
All right, another easy one.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gretchen, what's yours?
Oh, my website is GretchenKellyArt.com or GretchenKellyStudio.com, which is my Etsy shop where I sell from. And my regular GretchenKellyArt.com website shows my vast archive, ever-changing.
And that's Kelly with one E and two L's. And Cheryl is
my next project.
Yeah.
As soon as I get this show hung is
meaning
to
you don't have a website.
I don't have a website.
Not yet.
Not yet. Chad's been encouraging me to use Instagram, which I have struggled against just because of the trickiness of my phone. But
you could do it. It's
I
mean,
it's coming up.
Gretchen does
it's gonna happen.
I'm not a word person, and so I am more on Instagram than Facebook now.
Yeah.
And that has a lot to do with why a lot of people, I think, are attracted to Instagram. Less words, more
That's
pictures.
That's true, It's certainly a visual venue.
Yeah.
How about you, Maria? Are you on Instagram?
Yes, I am. I just started it, actually.
Yeah, I got to get your at.
Please, you know, everybody mention their Instagram.
What, on Instagram? It's Maria Zincio. Yeah.
Z-I-N-C-O.
Yeah. The Cologe is a little hard to spell. It's K-O-L-O-G-Z-I-E-J and then hyphen Z-I-N-C-I-O. So a lot of people would never be able to find it. So Maria Zincio is what I use for Instagram. I just started Instagram and have a lot of followers. And I'm on Facebook a lot, too. And I actually only use Facebook for my work. I don't do it for anything else but that. And sold some pieces on Facebook even, you know. Somebody will say, oh, I like that, you know.
Who knew that was going to be something that could happen?
Really, social media. I mean, it's just the way you handle it, the way you decide what you want to do with it. You know, I don't, I stay away from anything personal or politics or religion. I don't do any of that. It's strictly my work, or my shows, where I am. I throw in a birthday or two, and that's about it. But
well, as artists working alone, I mean, you have to find every avenue you can to put it out there.
Yeah, and it reaches really reaches a wide audience, and I'm just surprised. If it works, use it.
It's great for networking, and
it definitely
I've met a lot of people through Facebook and Instagram. Like,
yeah, I see your work all the time.
Yeah.
Love it. And I see your work all the time, Cheryl. Love it.
And Cheryl, you created an event for the exhibition.
For the show, right.
So where can people find that?
On Facebook.
On Facebook.
Cheryl Lacona and Friends.
At Davis Orton Gallery.
Events at Davis Orton Gallery. Correct. My first event ever created.
I know you and I are both sometimes... It's nice to have two artists, two professionals. We work in different rooms, but there's always a call from the far side of the house. Chad, I need your opinion. And sometimes we struggle with the computer,
the technical stuff.
Yeah, the tech stuff. I must say you're better at Photoshop than I am, and I'm a photographer and I use Photoshop all the time. But your work is primarily created through Photoshop, and you've gotten really good.
Well, that's, you know, the thing about being an artist, when you start using Photoshop, you realize that if you make a mistake,
you can do something.
You can make it go away. That was such a miracle to me. And you can layer things and you can try that layer. Oh, I don't know. Let's try this. Oh, this is so much better. So that I find really exciting.
Yeah.
It's funny when you say, when you make a mistake, it's the same thing with encaustic art. It's wax. And if it doesn't move me and I don't like it, I'll just take the heat gun and just blow it all away.
Yeah.
Wow.
You have to.
Yeah.
Wow. I know it's very different with the glass. Mm. Lots of times I'll try a lot of experimental stuff, layers, multi-firings, three or four times. But I put it in the kiln, and when it comes out, it's like, did it work or not? Do I have to keep working on it or not? I never know. And sometimes I do kill it, you know, by overdoing it, and it just doesn't work, and you can't back out of certain things.
So glass, I would imagine, is different.
Yeah. Very permanent.
But, you know, from one piece of glass to another piece of glass to another, you know, whether it's made by hand or it's produced.
Oh, yeah. Each kind of glass is very unique in its softness and its tone.
Do they play well together?
Which?
You know, mixing different glass.
I mix them when I get to the point of putting it together as a leaded window, so they can work great that way. You can use all sorts of combinations and get very different textures going on. What I do a lot of experimenting with is mixing the paint on the glass. I have a tendency to like to use plate glass. It's very hard, and it can take a lot of abuse, meaning a lot of layers and a lot of firing. You get some of your fancier, softer glass, your antique glasses, and that takes less abuse. It's softer, and it will be affected by too many firings.
So. You don't do reverse painting.
Oh, yeah, you can paint on both sides. But
what do you use for paint?
It's a vitreous paint, very specific for glass. It's the same old stuff that they used 1,000 years ago.
It's a pretty impressive surface, though. I mean, when you think about the slickness of glass and trying to paint on it, doesn't ever go into the...
Well, I bring the temperatures up to 1,250 degrees, and that does make the surface of the glass malleable so that it goes into the glass, and everything else burns off so that it's in the glass. You can use enamels, and that's more of a surface color and tone, but that is the less fired. So you are bringing it to a point of just getting soft.
And I do that on the computer by merging the images.
Yes. You can't back out saying, I don't like this. You know, it's like, cannot unmerge the glass.
All of you are finding your special ways to get to the end.
It's true.
Yeah.
The journey is fun, I think, for all of you.
It's a lot of experimenting, too, studying. Figuring out how much can you push it, where can it go with it, and will it succeed? You learn something no matter what comes out of that kiln.
And you have to learn, I think, at a point that it's not such a precious thing that if you mess it up,